Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, you know what time it is. It is a two-day week, so let's get this thing going right now. Jared Jones had himself a hell of a week, didn't he? Now you can add getting throttled by the Eagles in his own crib to that list. Buffalo Bills coach Sean McDermott turned the keys to his offense over to Nathan Peterman, and Nate Pete went legend. Five picks in 30 minutes of work, and Sean McDermott claims he did not regret the decision, only the result. Ike Taylor came in like a boss. So did Chargers corner Casey Hayward after cashing in two of those Peterman INTs. And Eric Weddle, the pride of the 909, made it an all-DB guest day, and that was a good thing. The Daily Jungle starts right now. Why don't we start with the Sunday night matchup? Why don't we recap the last few days for Jerry Jones? Jera has threatened to sue his fellow owners. Jera has seen his star running back suspended. Watched his quarterback get sacked a billion times in a blowout loss to Atlanta, and reportedly threatened to come after Roger Goodell, quote, with everything I have, end quote. And supposedly said that Patriots owner Bob Kraft is a, quote, bleep compared to what I'm going to do, end quote. And on top of all that, he had to apologize for a racially insensitive remark. And then he watched his team get humiliated by a division rival in prime time in the worst loss in the house that he built. I mean, that's a hell of a week. That's a hell of a ride. And the crazy thing is, it didn't even look like it was going to end up that way last night. I mean, at halftime, everything was coming up Jera. Dallas was up 9-7. They were shutting down Philly's vaunted offense. He was getting his Hall of Fame ring. He even talked at halftime about how he wanted to make the league better and how he wanted Goodell to, quote, provide unprecedented accountability to the ownership, end quote. So I guess what I'm saying is life was good for Jera at that point. Sweet new ring, beating the division leaders in prime time. He may as well have just said, hey, Raj, scoreboard, look up at it and tell me how my ass tastes. But then it all fell apart.
Wentz awaiting the shotgun snap. Crouches over to get it. Has time. Protection is there. Receivers are not. The throw to the goal line. Caught by Torrey Smith. And Smith reaches the ball across the goal line for the touchdown. Somehow Wentz fitted into the tightest of windows. Wentz sets, throws over the middle. Lunging for it is Alshon Jeffrey, who pulls it in the middle of the end zone on his hip for the touchdown. Prescott under pressure. The ball jarred loose. That's a fumble. Scooped up on the play at the 30-yard line by Bradham. Down the right side onto the 20. Breaks a tackle at the 10. He's going to go all the way in for the touchdown.
Uh-oh. My thanks to Westwood One. The Eagles come out at halftime, and they rip the Cowboys apart, scoring 30 unanswered points and stomping all over their heads and ruining Jerry's party. They went on scoring drives of 75 yards, 90 yards, and 85 yards. And every time the camera cut back to the owner's box, Jerry's night was getting worse and worse and worse. It was hard to know what took a worse beating last night, Jerry's team or Jerry's pride. Call it a tie. I'm surprised this guy's head didn't just explode at one point. And the worst part for the Cowboy fans is that Philadelphia beat Dallas in every way, shape, and form. There was nothing lucky about that. Nothing fluky about that. On the ground, they had a season-high 215 rushing yards. On the ground. They ran them into the ground. They ran over Dallas. They ran through Dallas. And then when the Cowboys did have a shot at bringing down Carson Wentz, he just shook off would-be tacklers and kept on hitting passes. And the Eagles' defense forced Dak Prescott into the worst passer rating of his career before his backup took over. Philly went into Dallas and essentially shut down that division before Thanksgiving. But last night wasn't about the Eagles or the Cowboys. It was about the guy who said that he wanted, quote, to be inspirational to our players, my players, and I want them to know that I'll do everything I can to help the Dallas Cowboys and help the NFL, and they should benefit from that, end quote. Yeah, one problem, Jera. I'm not exactly sure how inspirational that was. I don't know that the Cowboy players were distracted by any of the outside noise involving Jerry, but I don't get the sense that they were inspired by it either. I doubt they were in the locker room saying, let's go out there and win one for that guy who's dropping P-bombs on Bob Kraft. You see, for as much ink as Jerry gets, the Hall of Fame ring is the first ring that he's won in more than two decades. During that same time, New England has a fistful. Denver has three. The Ravens have two. The Giants have two. Teams like the Rams, the Bucks, the Colts, the Seahawks have more than the Cowboys. So Jerry gets a lot of run. He just doesn't get a lot of wins. And it may be true that nobody wants to win more than Jerry, but it's also true that nobody's won less and generated more pub than Jerry. So I'd say the last night was not a disaster for him. Or I'd say it was, but maybe it wasn't. Because the story was not about the Cowboys. It was about Jerry. And if it's about Jerry, that's fine with Jerry. If you want drama, Jerry is your man. If you want winning football teams, look elsewhere. And if you expect that to change, then that's on you, not on Jerry. He ain't changing. And if he's not, they're probably not. My man is everywhere. We are joined by Ike Taylor. Ike, it's good to have you back, Ike. How are you?
Ron, thanks for having me on your show again.
Ike, it's great to have you on the show again. It's always good to have you on this show, Ike. Always like talking to you. Yeah, last hour, Ike, we talked a lot about the Buffalo Bills, so I was curious to get your thoughts on this. Ike, go back to last week. What was your reaction when you first heard that the Bills were going to bench Tyrod Taylor for Nathan Peterman?
Yeah, I didn't understand that. I didn't understand that, Rome. Just looking at the fact, you know, I think every quarterback probably have two, maybe three bad games throughout the season. And for the most part, Tyrod, you know, he's very efficient. The man only have, well, last time I checked, he had 10 touchdowns, three interceptions. But I think he added that stat with the touchdown yesterday and no interceptions. So now I think he got 11 touchdowns, no interceptions. So I think that's pretty efficient. So I think the defense have been the problem for the Buffalo Bills. So when I look at it, I'm looking at Tyrod like the scapegoat. So then I get to thinking about his contract. You look at his contract, he got an injury clause. So if you get an injury clause, you know, the team don't have to pay him. So the best thing the team can do is just sit. You can't say it's Tyrod Taylor's fault. Now, you can say if you're looking for a Super Bowl quarterback, it might be a different issue. But to start Peterman over Tyrod Taylor, fifth-round draft pick from Pittsburgh, I thought something was kind of fishy with that. And we all saw that L.A. Chargers game, exactly what happened, Rome. So I'm looking at the whole situation like this don't even make no sense. You know, if you look at Tyrod Taylor, he's not a Cam Newton, but he's a dual threat. The man can't run and pass. He can't extend plays. If I'm looking at the offensive coordinator, you gotta adjust to your personnel. And I think a lot of the NFL coordinators, they don't know how to adjust to their personnel. They come in with a game plan from wherever they came from, and they stick with it. You gotta adjust to your personnel like the Bill Belichick's and the Shulas and those guys. You know, the Bill O'Brien's when he had Deshaun Watson, he adjusted his whole game plan when Deshaun Watson came in. He was stubborn for a minute. Coach Bill O'Brien, he just adjusted everything to the strength of Deshaun Watson, and you just saw the things he was doing before he got hurt. I think offensive coordinators have to do that. Sean McVay for the L.A. Rams, adjusting to Jared Goff. And, you know, just Sean McVay, just overall in general, I feel like he have a beautiful mind, Ron. But getting back to Tyrod Taylor, I feel there's no adjustments towards his skill level.
Ike Taylor joining us. Ike, I agree. Sean McVay does have a beautiful mind. Extremely well said. All right, so one more thought. If you're a member, Ike, of the Buffalo Bills, especially if you're a vet on the Buffalo Bills, and that's a team that had played its way into playoff contention, what are you thinking when you see a young quarterback go out there and throw not one, not two, not three, not four, but five picks in the first half?
I mean, you can't be mad at the young player. You got to be mad at either the front office or the coaching staff. The young man, you know, he just felt like he have an opportunity to come in and start and try to make some plays for the organization. It just so happened when you get down the pass in between Joey Bosa and Ingram coming off them edges, man, that's tough for anybody, let alone a rookie quarterback. But at the same time, Rome, I'm looking at it, you're 5-4, and if the playoffs was to start tomorrow, you would have been in the playoff hunt as a wild card. Why mess that up? Why not stick with Tyrod Taylor, who gives you a good option or a better chance to go in the L.A. Chargers and try to win the game? That's what I didn't understand, especially with the position you're looking at from that wild card standpoint.
Clones, give me 1 minute so I can talk to you about Stamps.com. Hey there, the holidays are coming up, so let me ask you a question. Who has time to go to the post office? Answer, none of you. It's going to be packed. You don't want to go there. So do what I do instead. Use Stamps.com. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Then the mailman picks it up. Stamps.com makes it so easy. They send you a digital scale so you can automatically calculate exact postage. Stamps.com will even help you decide the best class of mail every time. You can print your postage any day, anytime. Stamps.com is always open and there is no waiting. I use Stamps.com because I got sick of dealing with the nightmare that is the post office, and I saved so much time by doing it. I wish I had done it sooner. Right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Be sure to enter jungle. That's Stamps.com. Ike Taylor joining us. You can watch him on NFL Network. Also, Ike, going into yesterday, one of the biggest talking points for the weekend was the fact that Andy Reid was 16-2 coming off a bye. You couple that with the fact that the Chiefs were playing the Giants, and everybody was all over KC in that game. So, Ike, correct me if I'm wrong, but did you predict that the Giants would win that game by 3? And if so, what made you say that?
Man, I just had that feeling. Everybody was just leaning more towards on the 16-2 coming off the bye, and I'm just looking at it from a distance. And the tape I've watched, they maxed out too early. You know when you train, like you might train for a marathon, Rome, but you might train for a boxing match, or you might train going to the training camp. You can peak, or you might be a track star. You heard these people say you can peak too early, and I think just the Kansas City Chiefs. Big plays, home run plays, they peaked too early in the season. And now everybody's pretty much knowing what the Kansas City Chiefs are doing. And I think the Pittsburgh Steelers kind of put the blueprint out on how to defend the Kansas City Chiefs, and everybody pretty much doing the same thing. So I just looked at it as a trap game for the Kansas City Chiefs. And then you heard Coach Ben McAdoo having one-on-one talks. So I'm looking at it, either it's going to be real bad or the turnout going to be real good, because when you have heart-to-heart one-on-one talks during the season, everybody is getting their frustration. Everybody's getting whatever you got to think. You're getting everything off your chest, Ron. So I think that kind of helped. And just going to that game, I just thought it was a trap game.
You can watch Ike tonight on NFL Network's NFL Total Access Endgame following Falcons and Seahawks. Ike, you called that one. Then you've got the Vikings defense, which shut down that Rams explosive offense yesterday. Ike, what kind of thoughts do you have when you watch Minnesota's defense play?
Man, it's that November, December time, bro. I mean, as flashy as we want to talk about the L.A. Rams, as beautiful of a mind Coach Sean McVay has, as good as Jared Goff and Ty Gurley and Robert Woods and Sammy Watkins been looking, I know Coach Zimmer, he got a stout defense. It's a bend but don't break defense. So you would have to go 10 to 15 plays just about every series to score, and that's hard to do. That's very hard to do because offensive coordinators, they get antsy. Sooner than later, they want that one big, big, big play. And if you just watch the New England Patriots, they don't mind having 5-6-yard passes. They can dig and dunk down the field because they're patient. But a lot of OCs, and I'm not saying Coach Sean McVay is, sometimes he might be, but they want them big plays. And the way Minnesota play, it's a bend but don't break defense. And by the way, it's November, December time, meaning they're pretty much leading into the playoffs.
I follow Ike Taylor on Twitter. You should do the exact same thing. Ike, one of my favorite things you do during the season, you've got a weekly ranking of the cornerbacks in the NFL. Who is your top corner right now and why?
Patrick Peterson. I think Pat Pete. You know, for a while I had him lingering 3-4, 2-3-4, 2-3-4. But, you know, I just had Sherm, like, all around the best corner. You know, Patrick Peterson, of course, he's probably the most athletic corner because he can play receiver. He can go to the Pro Bowl as a punt returner. By the way, he can go to the Pro Bowl as a corner. But at the same time, I just felt like it was his time. Even on that bad team, he's the bright spot and he shines. I think after the first game, he gave up one touchdown. Since then, he haven't given up a touchdown. And he's been holding it down for the most part. I'm sorry, two touchdowns for the most part. So when I look at Pat Pete and what they ask him to do week in and week out, and that's to check the opposing team best receiver, I like what he's been doing throughout the course of the year.
Mike Taylor joining me for a few more moments. You know, like you mentioned Sherm. You've got Richard Sherman. You have Earl Thomas. You have Cam Chancellor. These guys are all 29, 30, busted up right now. They're extremely physical players. They've been out there a long time. What's going to happen going forward to that secondary? Have we seen the best that they've ever going to be? And what happens to them going forward?
Yeah, I think so. Because if you look at it, I mean, I'm just looking at how I looked at it. As I got older, I started having, you know, nagging injuries, Ron. You know, I think this year, 7, 8, for a lot of those guys, and they pretty much been starters for the most part of their career when you want to talk about the Legion of Boom. But, you know, Cam Chancellor, he has a neck issue. Just about 2 years in a row, Earl Thomas, you know, he broke his leg. Now he having hamstring problems. And now Sherm, you know, with his Achilles, man, it's tough. And as you get older, man, you don't get faster. You get wiser. The game slow down to you. But you don't get faster. These young guys, they get faster. They get more agile. They get more versatile. So when I see that, man, as far as, like, hitting their peak, yeah, I know a lot of these guys said they're going to come back strong, and I wish them well. But it's hard the older you get to really maximize your body, especially with young guys on the perimeter, and they're very talented when it comes down to that wide receiver or tight end position.
Hey, Ike, listen, you can speak to this because you've been through this, and you were a warrior. You are. You're a warrior. You're a gladiator. I'd say the same thing about guys like Sherm, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor. But as you point out, these are really serious injuries. I mean, Achilles and neck. And these guys are not dumb. They're looking across the line, and they see guys that are young, and they're explosive, and they're fast. What does that do to your mind? I mean, do you try to convince yourself, I still got this, they don't know what I know, or deep down, do you know you're in trouble, and how do you deal with that?
Nah, I think them guys are so confident, and the game slowed down so much. In between Sherm, Earl, and Cam, they know exactly what the offense is trying to do to their defense. So they're not going into the situation blind. On the IQ level, I think Sherm is probably one of the brightest minds as a cornerback. He can anticipate exactly. If he saw it on tape, Rome, and saw it in practice, and he see it on the field on Sundays, you best believe his instincts going to kick in and he's going to make that play. That's just Sherm. He does a great job of baiting. Earl Thomas the same way. When he got hurt last year, I think we all saw how important Earl Thomas was. Cam, of course, man, he's the enforcer. So you got three guys at three different levels that all play on the same page for the most part. It's hard. It's hard to find guys like that. I remember me, Troy, and Ryan Clark, or me, Troy, and Chris Hope, DeShay Towns, like, all of us had that chemistry where we just caught eye contact, and we didn't have to say a word. So when you got guys like that who played 7 to 8 years together, man, that's like your brother, you know? So when you tear that apart, man, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for the Legion of Boom. Right now, it's not looking good, Ron.
Yeah, I got to finally ask you before I let you go. You know, you and I have talked for so many years about this, and you've set your life up the way that you meant it to be. I mean, you were working on this before you were done playing, and now you're having this great broadcast career. But when you talk about playing with guys like Troy and Ryan Clark and being 5, 6, 7 years down the road, and you guys can anticipate what the guy next to you is going to do, I mean, will you ever have that kind of camaraderie again? You have to miss that, right? That had to have been, like, the best thing or the best part about it, right?
We still talk to this day, Ron. We still have fresh memories. We talk about games and we talk about plays like we played on Sunday.
Right.
Like, that's what you miss. You miss the brotherhood. You miss the locker room. You miss the smell of football. You miss the playing through injuries. You miss the accountability. You miss the, man, I messed up, man, I let my 10 brothers down on the field. Like, that hurts. That's what you miss, you know? And by the end of the day, a lot of people got to learn how to adjust. Athletes, adjust. And because you can't play football forever, Ron. I mean, we feel like we superhuman. You probably been a man since you were small, 7, 8 years old. Been a man in college. You're gonna get to the NFL, and when you retire, Ron, you 30. You might be 30. You might get to play to 30. Now, what do you do? So like you were saying, Rome, I was trying to set myself up, one, starting with you, just coming on your podcast and your radio shows. And I think guys really got to take that serious, man, try to set themselves up for afterlife.
So, like, what's toughest adjustment? Is it that identity, that loss of identity? Is it that the highs, man, the highs are so high, and even the lows, that I bet you missed the lows. As badly as the lows felt, that intense feeling, you probably even missed that. So what's the toughest part of the adjustment?
Man, you're not the man no more. There's no more red carpets. There's no more, hey, man, once you come to my restaurant, everything on me. You know, I hate to say it, but the girl's looking for the hottest, youngest, brightest thing every year.
Right.
So there's no more phone blowing up. There's no more nothing. Like, man, it's a reality check, and a lot of guys can't and don't know how to adjust because it's over. It's thanks for all your services. We appreciate you. Move on to your next life. And a lot of guys don't have a plan for their next life, Rome. That's why you see guys with depression. They become suicidal because, for the most part, since you was from 8 to about 33, 34, all you knew was football. That's all you knew. So now it's like, where do I go from here? And that's early in the real world. But for us, you know, we're ancient in the football world. So the adjustment is hard. It was easy for me because I never wanted to be the man. I didn't mind being number two. I knew Troy was Michael Jackson and we was the Jackson 5. I got it. I understood that. So mentally, my mind was already made up. Like, man, this is my plan. I'm going to have a few doors and a few options. And I wind up just taking the broadcasting role, Rome.
Ike, you're so great. Listen, before you go, and I kept you much longer than I meant to, but I have to ask you one more thing. If so many guys are not ready when it's over, how did you know in the midst of your career to start preparing for the next thing?
Oh, man, you just said number bridges. I really didn't know. You know, people tell you about it, like try to set it up, and you kind of shake them like, yeah, I got it. I got like 5-6 more years to play. Like, I'm cool. I got enough time. I didn't say that. You know, I came in as a rookie and, you know, still have my little radio show. I came in as a rookie. Like, my third year, I started my own little radio show because, you know, one of the veteran guys, Jerome Bennett, told me, hey, man, get the radio show so you can learn how to speak, so you can learn how to talk, so you can be a good analyst, so people can understand, so you can know how to break it down. Like, we didn't go to school for this, you know? Like, Rome, you've been in this game for so long, man. You can do this. I ain't going to say it's easy for you, but this like second nature for you. Like, doing TV, doing radio, doing podcasts, it's easy for you. That's just how it was for me with football. But the crazy thing about it is football go in. With you, Rome, you can do this to whenever you want to retire.
Hey, look, I don't want to panic. Bills Mafia, you know I've got your back, too. And I don't want to panic. Only one game into the Nathan Peterman era in Buffalo. I don't want to panic. I don't want to overreact. I'm just starting to think that maybe he might not be the answer. At least not the answer right now. Or pretty much ever. Look, I'll admit I might be overreacting. This might be a hot take. And I really don't want to be a prisoner of the moment. But I got to say, I really didn't love what I saw from Nate against the Chargers yesterday. But why don't we take a really rational approach to it? Things did start off pretty well. Buffalo got the opening kickoff. LeSean McCoy had a pair of nice runs. And then on 3rd and 3, Peterman picks up a first down. I mean, nice, right? Way to be. Sean McDermott looking pretty smart. Then Nate chases that with a 20-yard completion to Kelvin Benjamin on 1st down. Benjamin gets hurt on the play, so that's not good. But at this point, you know the Bills Mafia had Petermania. Following that completion with a 4-yard scramble to set up this play.
Play action fake. Peterman rolls right, fires short. Off the hands of DeMarco. Intercepted. Picked off by the Chargers. Coming back the other way into Buffalo territory at the 30, 25. And he's still on the run down the sideline. He is into the end zone for the touchdown.
Obviously, Bills radio. Look, let's be real. A pick six on the opening drive is not great. Not how you'd want to draw that up. But these things happen. And when you fall off that horse, you get right back on it, which is exactly what Nate Pete did. Buffalo gets the ball back. They go with a McCoy run, followed by an incomplete pass, and then chased it with this.
3rd and 11 for Buffalo at its own 11. The snap. Peterman out of the shotgun. pressured, flings it downfield, and it is intercepted. Intercepted by Casey Hayward. There's a flag on the play. Hayward gathered himself, gets up, running around the 30, and he's brought down at the 31-yard line.
Two picks? All right, less than ideal. Less than ideal. At some point, some of you in the mafia might have been thinking, maybe Peterman isn't the guy after all. I don't know what you all in the Bills Mafia were thinking, but I know exactly what Richard Sherman was thinking because he tweeted, quote, "So, they bench my guy Tyrod Taylor, and the guy they bring in has already thrown two picks with 10 minutes left in the first. Great decision." Gotta love that. My man, weighing in and dropping bombs on a game that neither he nor his team is involved in. Now, Buffalo's defense managed to hold the Chargers to a missed field goal, so it's still 7-0. And then two huge runs from LeSean McCoy later, and it's 7-7. The Chargers kick a field goal, they go up 3. But the Bills come back on the field after scoring a TD in their last possession, and you could tell that they were feeling it. So, Peterman connects on a couple of short passes, a classic move. Let him settle into the game. Then they try a couple of McCoy runs that go nowhere. So then they're looking at 3rd and 10. It's time to put the ball back in Nathan's hand.
Snap. Peterman hit as he throws it, and it is intercepted at the 45-yard line, picked off by Trey Boston. Boston on the run and finally going to be brought down at the Buffalo 45.
Damn. Third interception of the half. I mean, not great, right? But again, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. These things will happen. The question is, how do you respond? How do you weather the storm? And the answer is, if you're Nathan Peterman, not very well. Because this is how he responded on the very first play of the very next drive.
Peterman under center, the snap, three-step drop. And this one is picked off by Casey Hayward. At the 10-yard line, he goes down immediately by Thompson. It is an interception.
That's four. That's four for him. The grand slam of interceptions. Now, the best news of the day for the Bills was that they went 3 and out on their next two drives. I have never seen a team so happy and so relieved to go 3 and out because at least their punter was giving the ball back to the other team and not their quarterback. But if there is one thing we learned about Peterman yesterday, it's that he will not give up. You get knocked down 4 times, you get up 5. Or to put it another way, you get picked off 4 times, you get picked off 5.
Snap. Peterman looks, steps up, fires another one down the left side. This one is intercepted. This one is picked off by Trevor Williams down the far sideline. And he goes down at about the 47-yard line.
Yeah,
hell,
you know what we
talked about? How could it get worse?
It can't get worse.
Hell yes. Attaboy, Pete. First quarterback in NFL history to throw 5 interceptions in a half. Just when I thought that you were going to run out of time before the half, you still managed to get that 5th pick in there. Unfortunately, for some reason that I can't figure out, he was benched at halftime. What a ridiculous move. This guy was just getting loose. He was just getting warm. Then again, as Richard Sherman pointed out on Twitter, quote, "Wonder what they're going to say after this game about Tyrod Taylor. One bad game and he's benched. Do you cut the new guy after this half?" End of tweet. Well, they didn't cut him. Not only that, but head coach Sean McDermott didn't even guarantee that Peterman wouldn't start against Kansas City. I'll get to McDermott's comments in a moment, but I want to start with my man Peterman. He knew it was a tough day, but he insists he will be back.
Certainly before. And, you know, coach always says we never lose, we learn. And, you know, that'll definitely be my mindset moving forward. I'm going to learn a lot from this and make sure it never happens again.
My man, I love that attitude. I love that attitude. You never lose, you learn. You never lose, you learn. Yeah, I think that we learned that Nathan Peterman might not be an NFL quarterback. I think we learned that Nate Peterman might want to find a new line of work. You never lose, you learn? What are you, in 7th grade? Trust me, bro, you lost. And it was hideous. Well, you lost. We also learned that Sean McDermott is not the one for rash decisions.
I don't regret my decision. I regret the result. We didn't get the result we were looking for. I don't regret the decision at all.
Who's writing this stuff for these guys? Bob Griffin? I don't regret my decision. I regret the result. Yeah, I might suggest, Coach, that starting a rookie on the road against the Chargers pass rush was not the best idea. But that's fine. And I got to admit, I do love that line. I don't regret my decision. I regret the result.
I don't regret my decision. I regret the result.
What a great phrase that can be used anytime, any place by any of us. You know, after hitting the drive-thru at Mickey D's and slamming four entrees, I don't regret my decision, but I sure as hell regret the result.
I don't regret my decision. I regret the result.
Yeah, I don't regret my decision. I regret the result. Okay. He also said, and this is incredible, with a straight face, he's not sure who's going to start the next game.
I'm going to evaluate. I'm going to take my time and evaluate it. Well, I'm going to make the decision that I feel like is right for this football team.
I'm going to take my time and evaluate it. I'm going to take my time and evaluate it. Respectfully, what exactly is there to evaluate, coach? And how much time are you going to need? The guy threw 14 passes. He completed 6 to your team and 5 to the other team. Tyrod Taylor has thrown 3 all season. This dude threw 5.5. Look, I understand that you don't love Tyrod Taylor. I understand that he might not be your quarterback going forward. But you seriously can't need to take your time on this. The only thing worse than making the worst decision of the year by any coach in the league is refusing to own it. And the quicker you do, the better chance you have of keeping that part of the locker room that you have not already lost.
I don't regret my decision. I regret the result.
Chargers cornerback Casey Hayward is my guest. When you first found out that Nathan Peterman, a rookie quarterback, was going to make his first start against you guys, Casey, on any level, did you feel a little disrespected? And did the rest of the guys on defense feel that way as well?
I might have a little bit. I'm like, okay, they got a proven veteran. That's a really good player, we thought, because he does a lot with his feet and his arm, and he don't turn the ball over as much. So we like, they got a new quarterback coming in. Is he a rookie against a really good defense? We felt like we got two good pass, you know, edge rushers, probably the top two in the league, you know, duo. And then we got some really good corners and really good safeties and linebackers. We like, I don't know if they want to do this. That's especially in my head. We didn't talk about it. But in the inside, you know, people thought about it. Like, yo, that's a little disrespectful to start them against us. And any other defense probably would have felt the same way.
Casey Hayward joining us. We answered that question. I was going to follow you up and ask you, hey, listen, I mean, you got a pass rush that includes Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. You've got a secondary that includes a Pro Bowler like you. I don't know, but that's the decision they made. So knowing that, Casey, what was your approach going into that game? Did you have a feeling that there were going to be some interceptions to be had out there because of all the things you just said?
We knew we had opportunities. If you just go back and, you know, see the percentages and the records of rookies that start off, you know, start a season or start a game off for the first time, they don't tend to do good. So it's like, hey, either they're going to do really well or they're going to stink it up. Because you have no expectation. You don't know. You don't watch them much on film, so you don't know them that much. So either they do really well or they stink it up. So our job was try to, you know, have them sneak it up as much as possible.
We're talking to Casey Hayward. Corey Toomer got things started with that 59-yard pick six. And then on the next drive, Buffalo had a 3rd and 8 from their own 11. Can you take me through that play? What did you see? And then how good did it feel to come up and make that play the way you did with that pick?
We put a certain coverage kind of and we played the same coverage we did last week against Jacksonville. So it kind of left the middle of the field open. So I think he was throwing it, you know, to the right guy, you know, for the coverage sake, you know. But we got pressure from Joey. And the ball ended up being short, and I was able to see the ball come out and came and picked it off and grabbed it, you know. Just got to take advantage of it. Thank you, Joey.
Thank you, Joey is right. Hey, listen, one interception's good, two is much better. You didn't have to wait too long to get the second one. What did you see on the second pick? What happened on that play?
It was the same formation that I got the week before against Jacksonville. And I barely missed the interception the week before, and the dude caught it. And I didn't trust myself as much last week. It's the same formation. I said, if I see it this week, I'm going to jump it. And they literally ran the same formation, same route. And I said, I'm going to trust it and go. And I jumped it. I'm glad they didn't double move him.
Right? Casey Hayward joining us. And Casey, you came into the season after leading the NFL in interceptions. You were named a Pro Bowler last year, but you were really clear with everybody that what happened in the past was in the past. When you have a year like that, it'd be pretty easy for it to go to somebody's head, but you didn't let that happen. How did you go about dealing with that success and putting it behind you?
For me, you know, and most people, you've been successful all your life, especially with sports, if you got to this level. So it's pretty much the same, you know, never worry about the things in the past. You kind of got to worry about the now, because once you became all pro and Pro Bowl, people want to beat you. So you know you're going to get their all each and every week. And that's what I've been getting all week and all season. So I knew what to come in here and prepare for, and that's what I've been doing all season.
Same thing is, though, it's one thing to say, look, I'm not going to rest on my laurels, but you were much more systematic. You were much more specific about it. You said you wanted to go out there and improve your technique, among other things. So when you looked at the film, what didn't you like and what did you work on in the offseason?
I worked on a lot. I probably tried to work on my press more. Early in the season, I was banged up, so I didn't really get to do as much as I wanted to. I had a bone bruise and a bad sprained ankle, you know, and OTAs, so I didn't really get to do as much as I can. So I came into the season a little banged up. But as the season went on, like probably like week 3, 4, I was able to not even wear ankle, you know, not to even get my ankles taped and things like that. So it got better. So as the season been going, I've been getting a lot healthier and a lot better. Ever since then, my play just spiked up.
Casey, how do you work your way through that, right? You know you can't do what you can normally do, but you're banged up, but you know that's part of the game too. So as a pro, how do you deal with that injury, and how do you get your work in? How do you prepare yourself to go to battle every single week when you know you're not right physically?
Sometimes you just got to try to outsmart the other people. So I kind of know what they're doing before it comes and things like that. Because like you said, you're probably a little slower now that you banged up with your ankle and things like that. So you just try to outsmart the guys and kind of know what's going on before it comes. But I was still able to do everything I was supposed to. Like you say, each and every week, work on what you can work on, keep rehabbing and getting stronger and better.
Okay, so when you talk about getting spiked up, it's kind of a life that we don't really know. None of us know. We don't do it. We don't get it. What's that like? I mean, you just kind of spike up and know that's part of the job and I'm just going to get through it, and then it's going to wear off and I'll deal with that too?
Yeah, no doubt. That's what it's about. You know, as it go on, you know, you'll get better and better each week. And as I was going on from week 1 to week 2 to week 3, each week I was feeling a lot better. Even though I was playing fine, I was like, once this really wear off, it's going to be on. And it just started clicking. So you know, I'm happy it started clicking. I've been playing pretty good pretty much all season. You know, it's not over, so hopefully we can continue this trend on defense and continue to get better.
Casey Hayward, my guest, for a couple more moments. You know, earlier this year, you did this rapid-fire quiz with Nick Hardwick, and he asked you to name the toughest receiver you had gone up against, and you said Calvin Johnson. What were those matchups like, and then how'd you go about approaching him?
You know what? I guarded him a couple times. My coach did not put me on him like all the time. I guarded him when he was in the slot when I was in Green Bay. But I can give you a couple of scenarios when we played him. It was so crazy. He was so good in the red zone that we viced him. We put two people on him at the same time, like a gunner. And we was like, well, you know he's not getting the ball. So the ball got to go somewhere else. We literally put two people over him, like punt return almost.
Crazy. Have you ever gone up against a guy that commanded that kind of respect or that kind of attention from a D coordinator, any other receiver like that?
Not to that degree, but probably more like Julio. I'd probably give you like Julio to his standpoint. Big guy, fast guy, can run, do everything similar to Calvin. Calvin was just 6'6 with it.
Yeah, right. So who's the tougher matchup? Those really big physical guys or maybe the smaller guys that are really fast that you got to chase around?
Probably the smaller guys. Probably the smaller guys that are really fast and still can run a route tree and still strong like the OBJs, the Odells, and the Coopers and things like that. Those type of guys tend to give a lot of people a hard time.
Hey, Casey, before you go, I appreciate you doing this, especially on a short week. In fact, what's it like on a short week? I mean, it's great when you have that win. If you're going to have a short week, you better come off a win, but that's a really short week. And you've got a Thanksgiving day, which probably gives you a little bit of extra juice. But how do you get your mind and body right on a short week?
Coaches got to help you in practice. you know, they can't kill you because you just came off a short, you know, just played Sunday, so it's hard to practice right after that. But you got to try to go and put your body in the ice to get the recovery things, rehab as much as you can, get your massages and things like that early throughout the week. Because, like you said, it's a short week, and nobody really cares if it's a short week because both teams got short weeks.
No, you're right.
The Cowboys seem to have a little shorter because they played at night.
They got beaten down. So last thought, if every game in the NFL is special, is there a little extra juice when you're playing the Cowboys in Dallas on Thanksgiving when you know everybody in the country is watching and all your peers?
It might make it a little bit special because it's Thanksgiving, but I try to treat them all the same. It's just another game. Just so happens to be on Thanksgiving against the Cowboys, and they normally play on Thanksgiving, so it should be a good game. Going to Dallas, trying to pull out another victory, try to get closer to this playoff.
Okay, now this guy, Ron in New Mexico. Reason I know Ron in New Mexico is because we thought that he was Ryan in New Mexico. Do you remember this call? Let's go to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Ron, you made it in under the wire. Hi, Ron. How are you?
What's up, Romy? How are you doing?
Good. How about you, Ron?
It's actually Ryan. I didn't want to clarify it.
It's not Ron. It's Ryan.
That's not a good call. No.
Why'd you do that, Alvin?
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
And to be fair, I didn't run him. I'm not looking to run Alvin under the bus. In fact, I'm not. Because Alvin can do whatever the hell he wants. Alvin has the autonomy and the authority to run anybody, anytime. And he ran that guy for correcting me because I got his name wrong. Which is what he should do. I got his name wrong. I should have been corrected. Alvin's response to me was, A, you never correct the host. Yeah, but Alvin, I'm wrong. Probably a lot of times. Alvin's response to me was Ron, Ryan, Robert, whatever. Just go with it, dude. I don't know. I mean, if somebody said to me, hey, Jumpman Joe, I'd say Jim. Or if somebody said, hey, Jeff Rome, I'd say Jim. So, Ron, sorry about that. I'm kind of not sorry about that. You know, that's just what Alvin does. It's Alvin's world. Anyway, Ron. In New Mexico, let's run it back. Let's try it again. Nice to have you, Ron. What's up?
What's going on, Romy? How are you doing?
Good, good. How about you?
I'm doing great, actually. I have something to say to all the haters and all, specifically the Dallas fans. Enough, okay? I'm tired of hearing about it. The Deliverer, the Redeemer, the Gridiron Messiah, the Savior, the Almighty, Carson Wentz, is here. He's going to take us to the Promised Land. And he just whooped on your Cowboys' butts last night. I don't talk about Dak Prescott anymore if he's not nowhere near him. Okay? I'm tired of hearing about, oh, he's this, this, and that. No. Carson Wentz is the true thing. He's going to take us to the Promised Land and deliver us. Enough about it. I don't want to hear about anything else about these Cowboys. They're terrible. 5-5. Eagles are 9-1.
That's good news for you, Ron. That's good news for you. Your take, not so great. But the fact that I just came to you as Ron when your name is Ryan and you didn't correct me that time, you get yourself a golden ticket.
I've got a golden ticket.
And that's a guy who learned his lesson.
I've got a golden ticket.
Ron's like, screw it. I know they're going to call me Ron anyway going forward. I know that I'm Ron from now on. Yeah, what the hell? I'll just go with it. I said, hey, Ron, what's up? How you doing? He said, good, Rome. How are you? I said, good. He goes, I'm great, actually. He's great, and he's Ron, and now he's in the smack off. Ronald, my man, you have no shot of winning. But then again, you got a better shot than 99.999% of the universe because you are in. Ronnie, you got yourself a golden ticket. We are joined by Eric Weddle. Eric, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Rome, my man. It's great to be on with you, man.
E-Dub, what's up, man? How you living? How are things?
Everything's great. Off a big win, huge win. We needed it, and We got confidence. We got a 6-game stretch. We control our destiny, and we'll see where it takes us.
All right. So what that was your second shutout in 3 weeks, third of the season. Look, I know you're not going to celebrate right now because you've got a ton of work to do. But how much confidence is the defense playing with right now?
Yeah, I mean, after when we played Miami, we played well, and then we came back against Tennessee, and we let a few plays beat us. And right now as a team and defensively, we're taking upon ourselves to these next 6 weeks, including last night's game, that we can't just be good. We have to be great. We have to go out and win games for our team for us to have a chance to get in the playoffs. And that's our mindset, special teams and offense, that they could do their part. But at the end of the day, we got to go win games, and that's what we're trying to do.
Baltimore Ravens safety Eric Weddle joins us. So yesterday was the second straight game you had an interception. Can you take me through that one? What did you see on that play?
Yeah, Hundley dropped back. It was I was just a middle post safety, and the tight end ran a deep over out, and he was open initially because our corner backside had a curl route, and he kind of hung right there. So Hundley moved to his right and started scrambling, and all week watching him on film and studying him, he liked to move to his right, and he liked to extend plays, so we knew we had opportunities because he liked to hold on to the ball, and he liked to force it and try to make the big play. So that's what he tried to do. He tried to leave it out there for the tight end, and he ended up getting hit a little bit, so I flared up there, and I was able to run it down. So it was a huge play. We ended up getting a pick in the end zone before that, and to start the game with three turnovers really started the momentum and really put him on his heels and dominated the rest of the game.
Especially tough for a young player. Eric Weddle joining us. Now, as a defense, you lead the league in interceptions this season. You tied for the lead last season. When you do it consistently, it's not an accident. So how do you go about doing that? I mean, is it a matter of great schemes, great hands, or is it something else?
Well, I think, it was a point of emphasis when I got to Baltimore last year. Before I got there in 2015, they had six total interceptions. So obviously, they wanted to bring more playmakers in. And it's just creating turnovers wins games. And I'm a proponent that you either know how to catch the ball or you don't. So if a guy's never really made an interception, he's just a guy that's going to bat balls down, that's probably what he's going to be. But if you're a playmaker and you can catch the ball and you have instincts and can read the quarterback, then this is the defense that can feature you. And adding Brandon Carr, drafting Marlon, Jimmy healthy. I mean, we got playmakers in the backfield, and it works hand in hand with the rush and with the guys covering well.
It's so funny to me, Eric, because I know exactly what you're saying. Like, either you can catch the ball or you can't, and there's so much more to playing the position than catching the ball. But we are talking about some of the greatest athletes in the world that have gotten to the very top of their profession. It's kind of hard for me to believe that on any level that guys back there, quote, can't catch the ball.
Well, like you said, a lot goes into it. I think most guys can catch the ball, but when you get into the game and the feel and being able to play the ball, actually judge the ball, where is it going, what is the trajectory, time your jump, get your hands in the air. Like, I just think a lot of guys don't have the feel of going and attacking the ball. And I think for me, my baseball background playing center field just helped me tracking the ball and don't get in at its highest point. I think it's helped me over my career. But, some guys got it, some guys don't. That's why most corners are play corner, because they can't play receiver, and that's why you stick them out there.
Eric Weddle joining us. That's a great analogy. Like, when you play center field, you're right. You learn to track the ball. I was going to try and make another analogy. Is it at all like a guy getting rebounds? Like, Dennis Rodman was amazing because he could play the angles, and he always seemed to know exactly where the ball was going to be and how it would come off the glass. Is there anything to it like that, in playing those angles and knowing how the ball is going to go?
Yeah, I mean, just take, for example, like Richard Sherman, who's one of the best at playing the ball in the air as a corner, where a lot of guys are in phase, where they're in phase with the receiver running on a nine route, but they just don't know how to time their jump or don't know how to feel the wide out, whether they need to look back for the back shoulder or do they get the head around on the deep nine route. So he's a perfect example of how a guy who's long, tall, maybe not as fast as most guys, but has unbelievable instincts, unbelievable playmaking ability on the ball. And when the ball's in the air, he's like a receiver going to catch it. So it's a perfect example of a guy who knows how to play the ball and other guys that don't.
So, Eric, the way you're talking about the game right now, is that kind of innate? Is that something you can't teach? Is that something you always had, or did you learn that and kind of will it?
I think for me personally, I've always been instinctually good with sports, with football in general. There are plays that happen in the game where a young guy asks, how did you do this or why did you do that? And it's just, you can't really explain it because you just did it off instinct. You felt it, you trust yourself, and you go make the play. And, you know, with that being said, I don't think you can teach someone instincts of football or teach them to go play and go play the ball. Like, young guys will come in, and I'll know right away if they're going to be a playmaker or not just by watching them practice for a few days and judge a football on a, you know, a deep ball over the middle. Can they go judge it and attack the ball, or can they not?
We're talking Eric Weddle. There's that. There's the instincts, and then there's your approach. And when you were in San Diego, it always seemed to me that you were one of those athletes that was going to do everything you possibly could to get what you had, which is not to say that you didn't have a lot. You had a lot, but you were going to get everything you possibly could. But as I've watched you since you got to Baltimore, and again, I'm here in California watching from the outside, it seems like you're now approaching it like, well, what if I never get a chance to play ever again? Like, you've always been really driven, but has the motivation changed at all? Has it maybe increased since you've been in the league? And did you go to another level since getting to Baltimore?
Yeah, I think I was, motivated by the way things ended in San Diego. So to prove them wrong and their decision to not want me back. So obviously that was a point of emphasis. But just, I'm later in my career. This is my 11th year. So I don't have many years left. I mean, I'm not going to be those guys that hang on to the game and you're playing on the last leg and you look horrible out there. I'm going to go out on my account and playing at a high level. And I just look at football in general and what it's brought to me and my family and the relations that I've built that I cherish those things. So now looking at my career now, it's about winning. It's doing whatever it takes to win a Super Bowl, because who knows if I'm going to play next year? Like, we don't know how everything is. I can get hurt. I can have a career-ending injury. So why not give everything I got for my teammates, for the organization, to give it all? Why not? You know, why not do everything you can, sacrifice everything on the outside for your team right now? And, you know, that's what I just try to live by every day, and it's worked out well, and I'm just trying to give everything I can for my team.
No, and then you have no regrets. Then you look back and you have no regrets. Now, there's a lot of young
guys.
No
doubt.
Right? There's a lot of young guys that want to spend time with you and pick your brain. There's a great story that back in the day, a guy that I really respect, Tequila Spikes. Tequila Spikes told you, if you're really a pro in this league, it never shuts off, end quote. What did that phrase mean to you in terms of how you handle that job?
He's exactly right. I mean, Tequila came to our team, and we were bummed because we had just came off, you know, playoffs, the previous season. And we brought Takeo in. He'd never been to the playoffs. And we wanted to do everything he can to just get the taste of playoffs and what it meant and the highlight of your career to be in the playoffs and have a chance in the Super Bowl. And he told us, as a leader of our defense, he said those exact words. And it's true. Like, I can wake up and make breakfast for my kids and get them ready for school and take them to school. And the whole entire time, I'm thinking about the game plan. I'm thinking about the previous game. I'm thinking about what I could have done better. How can I help my team? How can I lead better? And it's true. If you're not always thinking about the game, then you're not a pro. If there's other stuff that's on your mind, you can't be counted on Sundays. And that's the reality. I mean, you can say what you want, and guys can mask it. But if you're not all in all the time, then you're never going to be great in this league.
So, Eric, I think that's what distinguishes you, among other things. But if you've got 53 guys in the locker room, I can't imagine that all 53 are dialed in, locked in like that. So if you have a teammate, especially somebody on your side of the ball who's not, how do you handle that? What do?
You just be there for them. Quite honestly, I've learned I don't judge. I don't look at them any differently. And that's my brother, and I'm going to be there for him. I'm going to help him any way I can. And you know, you never know what's really going on the outside once they leave the building. You know, they could be going through a lot. And if you're not there for them as a teammate, then you can never help them. So for me personally, I just try to be there for them. I'm always there. I'm a phone call away, a text away. You need anything, I'm here for you. I got 2 ears. I listen well. I don't judge. We've all made mistakes. But at the end of the day, I've seen guys who have long careers and been at the top of their positions. And I think the way to do it is sacrifice and playing for your teammates and doing everything you can to be your best. If you're not willing to be the best or strive to be the best, then I don't want to be around you. Quite honestly, I don't like being average. I don't like being good. I want to be the best. And if you don't want that, then don't be around me.
Eric Weddle joining me, speaking of phone calls or texts. Eric, You've still got that 909 number. Is it because you don't want to change the number, or are you looking to rep the 909, or both?
Ah, shoot, man. 909's home. My parents still live in the 909 in Ranch Cucamonga. So,
love it.
That's home for me, and people know me for the old Eric from Altaloma High School, just a good kid who works hard. So it always reminds me of where I come from.
Don't you ever change that number. I love it. I love it. And last thought, you are legendary for your ice cream celebrations after a win.
Yes.
I had to go there. How do you go about celebrating a shutout win in Lambeau where you have a pick? I mean, is that one scoop? Is that two? Is that a banana split? What is that?
Man, I had planned it. I had bought some white chocolate Kit Kat minis and white chocolate Reese's Buttercups. So I had already those planned and stashed. I didn't know which one I was going to use because it had been a few weeks since I've had some ice cream and was hoping this would be the week. So I had cookies and cream ice cream with crunched up white chocolate Kit Kat minis. Then I got home and I had homemade brownies there sitting on the table. So now I crunched up some homemade brownies, threw that in there. Some caramel, and it was a joy. At 2 a.m., that's where I was eating since our flight was delayed 4 hours, and I sat in traffic for another hour on the way home. But I did get my ice cream in, and it was well worth it.
Dude, was that not the greatest bowl of ice cream in the history of the world?
It was definitely up there. I try to up it up each week. So we'll look forward to it hopefully Monday night. I'll send out a picture.
In Buffalo, Richard. What's up?
Holy freaking hell is about all I can say right now, Jim. A few weeks ago, the Bills looked primed for a playoff run. Now they're the laughing stock of the league. I can't blame McDermott for making the quarterback switch, but that didn't make the ensuing nightmare any easier to watch. The only way things could have gone worse for Nathan Peterman is if he died on the field. And what the hell happened to that defense? It went from top-notch to complete garbage in less than a month. Can't believe I'm saying it, but this has got to be the new low of the soon-to-be 18-year playoff drought. Hell, this might be the new low point in the history of the franchise. No idea where the team goes from this point on, but if I hear you got to trust the process one more time, I'm going to lose my friggin' mind. Wore that vaunted Bills defense holding Kansas City to under 50 this week. War Thanksgiving Day football. Since the Bills aren't playing, I might actually enjoy it. Happy Thanksgiving to you and the crew, Jim. Thanks for the vine. I'm out.
Monday's done. This week is half over. We've got one more Daily Jungle before the holiday break and an absolutely epic Jim Rome podcast set for tomorrow. Former mob boss Michael Franzese joins me in studio. If you have never heard him, you are not going to want to miss that. Check back tomorrow. See you then. I'm out.